I was working at a fashion e-commerce company as a social media manager. And the fraud team, for better lack of a word, called me up and was like, hey, like, we're getting a ton of traffic and revenue from this one link on Pinterest. Can you check this out for me? And I looked it up, and it was this woman who was this head of social like activities at her sorority at SMU. She actually then went on to start Like to Know It, and she's like a huge force in the industry now. But I was like, I remember just seeing her when she was in college and seeing the amount of traffic that she was driving. And I was like, wow, okay, this is the future.
This is May Kowalski talking about the first time she encountered an influencer. Today, May is the CEO of the influencer marketing firm, Obviously, and my guest for this episode of Lives of Tomorrow. And today, we're talking about the creator economy. That could be streamers, artists, podcasters, or social media influencers with a big following who make money by leveraging their creative talents. Now, this is an economy that's big and rapidly growing. To help me make sense of it all and discuss its future, May was the perfect person to chat to. I'm Carla Bisacci, CEO of WGSN, the world's largest trend forecasting company, and you're listening to Lives of Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast about how we will live our lives in the future. So, before we start talking about the importance of the creator economy, May, please can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is May Kowalski. I'm the CEO and founder of Obviously. Obviously is a full-service influencer marketing company and platform. And we work with large brands like Google, Amazon, Unilever, and the like. I've been in the industry, the creator economy, for over a decade now and really seen it just grow and evolve and explode so quickly. So really looking forward to this conversation.
Amazing. So at WGSN, we define the creator economy as a growing field, as you've said, of people who are making money by leveraging their creative talents, typically using digital platforms to connect with audiences. So that could be streamers, artists, podcasters, or social media influencers with a significant following. But what's your definition of the creator economy?
I think it's anyone who has an audience and a story to tell, and they're doing that online. And then I think they can leverage that in many ways. So maybe they're making a significant amount of revenue from those social platforms. But I think the new evolution of that is actually, what are they building off of those platforms and driving their audiences to? So whether that they're launching a beauty brand, or, you know, they're hosting fitness retreats all over the world, or they have a really active newsletter or Substack, how are they really monetizing and using that audience in, I think, really, really creative ways.
You have a generation now who this is a career option for them. And then there are, you know, significant numbers that aspire to have a career as a content creator. And then on the flip side of that, I would say there's also quite a lot of negative opinions about this, whether this is a good thing. And I think a lot of that goes through the slant of influencers and people feeling quite strongly about whether influencers are a good thing or a bad thing. You've really lent into this as a, well, it's your business's raison d'etre. How do you kind of reconcile those two different opposing influences on this entire economy?
I've seen one or several studies where it was around 70% of graduating high schoolers, when asked, what is, you know, your ideal career, is saying content creator, influencer. And so I think there's really some generational divide here too, because it is so new and it happens so quickly. I mean, when I started, obviously, Instagram was still relatively, didn't have stories yet, didn't have ads yet. You know, all of this has happened very, very fast. So I think the big thing here is we think typically of an influencer maybe as someone who is just oversharing, you know, kind of like the stereotype isn't true, isn't the rule. I would say we work with so many people here at Obviously where they might be amazing at knitting, you know, and they have a following of 15,000 people who anytime they release anything related to knitting, their followers are rampant about it. They are adding so much value and it's really building this awesome community. Or maybe it's someone who is really into mountain biking, is going to the, you know, I follow this awesome woman who, you know, she's going to the Olympics for mountain biking and she's training. Do I mountain bike? No, but I'm just like following along on this like amazing, yeah, you know, Olympic journey to like training. And it's just this view into this subculture that I otherwise would not have any any visibility into, because it's not going to be in a mainstream magazine. It's not going to be in a mainstream TV show. And so I think that that's really where the beauty and the awesomeness of the influencer and the creator economy lies. It's with these people who just really tapped into these super passionate subcultures. And they've been able to make that their entire career and their passion. So I think that's fantastic. And I think that, yeah, the younger generation is seeing that and it's like, wow, that could really be me.
What you've sort of just said is there's no such thing as typical, because it's about cultures, but it's about subcultures. And I imagine it's about, you know, even niches within that. That mountain biker, there might be someone who's, you know, amazing at downhill biking. It might be where in the world they're mountain biking. There, you know, it can get quite small and yet still have a big impact because there are enough people who are passionate about that. We talk quite a lot here about scaling the niche, and not necessarily to do with this economy, but that those two things do go hand in hand, I presume.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think they're one and the same. You have people who are really influential in a given niche who just really attract an audience. And maybe that audience is 10,000 people, maybe it's 15,000 people. But anytime they say that they're doing something, people listen.
So you will have been asked this question a gazillion times before, but what makes a successful content creator?
The big thing is it's just having a really interesting narrative, you know, and having a really interesting story and having a compelling way to tell that story. And does it resonate with a core group of people? And that could be around rug making. Actually, like, I'm randomly on like rug making TikTok right now. It could be on, you know, social commentary around this new fad of being a trad wife. I mean, there could literally be, there's law, big law TikTok is huge, where people talk about how many hours they work and what it's like to work at a really big law firm. So I think it's all just about, are you really providing those content nuggets that are just really interesting to people and get them to tune in no matter what part of the universe you're talking about?
Again, coming back to sort of definitions of this, it's sort of thought about the kind of more creative side or the more leisure side of our lives. And actually, no, this is crossing over into absolutely every aspect of our lives now.
Right. I think it's really the creativity applied to everything. So it's a creative expression of this is my life in big law. You know, like, what? Okay. Like, you know, but that's actually really, really interesting. There's an NFL football player who I follow who actually just got released, and it seems like he's going to be forced into retirement. And so he's talking on his TikTok about how he just got into the NFL broadcast school, which is like the feeder to be on TV. And the reason he got on is because he has, you know, several hundred thousand followers on TikTok already. And he's just a clear natural, and he's so fun and great. And you just like the guy, you know, on TikTok. So not only is this creative, I'd also make the point that it is the way to really solidify your job and your future career. And it's like, oh, and I also have this huge audience. And I think in the future, that's going to become really, really important.
Now, the value of this economy is huge, right? So in my research, Goldman Sachs research have said that it's set to value $480 billion by 2027. So put into context, this is not just some small thing on the side. This is front and center about how publishing, I guess, has completely evolved, how brands speak to us, how we as consumers make decisions. So could you see that coming a decade ago? What was it that kind of sparked your enthusiasm for this entire industry?
Yeah, so I was working at a fashion e-commerce company as a social media manager. And the fraud team, for better lack of a word, called me up and was like, hey, like, we're getting a ton of traffic and revenue from this one link on Pinterest. Can you check this out for me? And I looked it up, and it was this woman who was this head of social like activities at her sorority at SMU. She actually then went on to start Like to Know It, and she's like a huge force in the industry now. And I was like, I remember just seeing her when she was in college and seeing the amount of traffic that she was driving. And I was like, wow, okay, this is the future. And I think it's like a light bulb went off there, because I was working with brands who were like, hey, how do we get more likes on our Facebook page? How do we grow our Twitter account? How do we get more Instagram followers? I think it's a lot less about people following your account, and it's more about, can you partner with people who are actively growing their own accounts? Because people want to follow other people, and that's what's just way more exciting than hearing what the brand team necessarily wants to push out right now. So yeah, I guess long story short, I did see that 10 years ago and I was like, wow, this is going to be like, this is the new media. This is where people who would have been working at Condé Nast or working in these magazines, working at fashion magazines, this is where they're going to be, is they're going to be their own editor. They're going to create their own content on their own channel and monetize it themselves. So it's really amazing to see it just explode as quickly as it has too. I know I saw that Goldman Sachs report. I was like, wow, that is a lot.
That is
a lot of billions.
But it's also interesting because every year there will be, whether it's opinion or research-based, that this is coming to an end. And actually, maybe let me rephrase that. Not necessarily that the creator economy is coming to an end, but the influencer economy. And I think maybe that's why I find what you do so fascinating, because you're not just saying you've got to be featured on Kim Kardashian's Instagram account. You're working with micro-influencers. You're working with people who are really in a very kind of specific area. And it isn't necessarily just about social media. It might well be about videos or podcasts or all of those things. So I do find it all so fascinating how even within this, it has evolved a lot and it no doubt will continue to do so in the future.
Yes, definitely. I think that people are sometimes surprised to hear me say that, like, oh, if you're an influencer and a creator, you need to be thinking past just your own account. You need to be thinking past the content that you're creating and the brand partnerships that you're doing, because all of Obviously's work is really connecting brands to influencers and having them do like really amazing brand sponsorships that work incredibly well and that are really exciting. And I love this business. I think it's fantastic. You know, I think I saw a stat, it was around 75% of influencers really make a majority of their revenue from those brand sponsorships. I think, especially if you're a micro or a mid-tier influencer, just really emerging, just growing. But I also think that should really be a stepping stone for you. You know, that should be the thing that helps you really know, hey, I have real traction here. I can really make this a career. I can make this a business. And if you think about it like that, you're starting out with sponsorships and then you're quickly thinking about what are the other ways that you're going to really monetize and grow this business. I think there are quite a few influencers who have really fallen into the trap of just relying on working with brands. And I think that when you do that, the autonomy that you had for starting your own account and creating your own content starts to slip away. As you do hire people, you do have more expenses, but then you become more and more reliant on working with brands. And then I'd say almost paradoxically, brands want to be working with people who are working with fewer brands and are telling really, really authentic stories and are actively growing their audience and focused on their own content rather than the branded content. So to kind of get out of that whole cycle, to really, you know, make sure that you're owning your own business and thinking through, what are the other ways that I'm really adding value for my audience outside of just doing brand deals, I think is really important.
A brand's going to need influencers in the future if they can just create virtual versions of them that behave and do exactly what they want them to do.
There's always going to be real human influencers. I could see there being virtual influencers as well, and that, you know, starting to take up a portion of the influencer marketing space. But I guess the parallel for me is really hugely successful commercial artists, like say a Jeff Koons or someone. He's not actually building the huge balloon sculpture. His whole team is doing that. So I think you shift from maybe being, hey, it's my face on camera 24/7 and I'm doing like a really raw style get ready with me video, and actually becoming, oh no, I'm the conceptual engineer of what we're going to do and what we're going to do going forward. And I think a really great example of that is what Mr. Beast has done. He's in every video, but he's got a whole team who's like, hey, here are the 100 wells we're going to build in Africa this week. Or here is, you know, the supermarket that we're going to buy and shut down and have one guy live in. You know, he doesn't have to be all things story time. I think the way people tell stories will evolve and AI will become part of that. But the person who's actually coming up with those ideas that really, really excite the audience, I think that you're still going to need that person.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm very pro anything that requires humans in the future.
me too.
Okay, let's get to know you a little bit and then we'll come back to how the creator economy is going to evolve in the future. So these are really quick fire, get to know you questions. Don't think too hard about your answers. When are you happy?
When I'm with my family is fantastic. I also love just being outside and being really active.
What do you rarely share about yourself?
I think a lot of founders and CEOs are doing this like building in public thing, which I really like and I like following, but I think I pretty infrequently air the things, the challenges and the things that are really like, you know, I'm struggling with in the business, which is, I think, somewhat different than a lot of really visible entrepreneurs.
However big or small, what one day-to-day life hack could you not live without? Could be an app, could be a ritual you go through.
I have started reading the paper in the mornings.
Well, like an actual newspaper.
Like an actual paper.
Oh my goodness.
I really like it. Yeah, yeah. My husband and I do that. You know, we got, you know, our son's running around. Yeah. So that's the new ritual that I'm really liking, with a cup of coffee, you know, just like getting up a little bit earlier.
Love that. What was the last TV show that you binged and you had to recommend?
So I actually got this recommendation from Hillary Clinton.
Oh my God, that's a good line.
At an event, she was on stage. But it's Astrid. It is a PBS show. It's actually French. And she's a criminologist researcher, and she's working with the police department. And it's just, it's such a fun, like, detective show, but it's also just that much smarter. And like, I really like it.
Okay, I've just written that down. And then if I enjoy it, and then I can say, oh yeah, this was from Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
Last one, when and how do you prioritize yourself?
I think I need to do a better job of that. I really try to block some time on the calendar and just like take a few walks during the day. I think especially in the hybrid work from home, work from the office, it's just so easy to kind of go the whole day without like, oh my God, I didn't walk a few blocks. So that's my big thing now, is just blocking walking time. And yeah, so that's a very small way. Maybe I need to do better at it.
Oh yeah, I hear you on that. Okay, let's go back to the future of the creator economy. In the WGSN Creator Economy Forecast 2025, which we published back in 2023, we quoted you as saying that in the next 10 years, all the biggest brands will be made by creators. Can you explain this and why you predict this for the future?
Yeah, I think this is really exciting. So I think that all the biggest brands will be creators in the next 10 years for a few reasons. One, just the fragmentation that we're seeing on these social media platforms. So if you're really into one specific subculture and you have a few influencers that you follow there, and they tell you that like, hey, this is a great thing to buy. Not only that, I actually created it myself and I've been following that person. I'm going to buy it. It's not just like, hey, influencing me to buy a brand that they like. It's a brand that they literally made themselves. And I think, you know, I think the beauty industry is really ahead of its time in a lot of ways. And I think that it is really kind of the bellwether for other industries in this. But you see, you know, Rare Beauty with Selena Gomez, you see Rode with Hailey Bieber, you see Summer Fridays, just the list goes on and on of like Kylie Cosmetics. I mean, these huge influencers are really the ones who are creating the next category of brand, because they have the audience and they have the ability to have the distribution, where you see all the D2C brands who are raising so much money in like the early 2010s, they had to pay to really get those eyeballs, to really get people to know them and care about them. Now you're like, hey, I already have the audience. I have a million followers, or I have, you know, 500,000 followers, even 50,000 followers, but they really care and they will buy and they will tell their friends if they really like it. And so you need that ability to have that distribution and really cut through the rest of the noise. And so I think that's going to be just hugely important going forward.
I'm just thinking like my kind of beauty cabinet at the moment, there's a journalist called Sally Hughes, who has a huge following on social media and has created her own skincare brand. I've got like 5 of the products because I trusted her first, because she did amazing reviews of other people's beauty products. And anytime I bought one of them and it did exactly what she'd said. So when she put her name to her own brand, of course, it was like a no-brainer. Why wouldn't I want that in my bathroom cabinet?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And the list goes on. I mean, Shani Darden, You Beauty, there are just so many fantastic brands. And otherwise, then you have to, if you're not doing that, you have to be like, say, MAC Cosmetics, and then you need to hire brand ambassadors. And I just think that model is not as potent and powerful as like, hey, I've been in the factory. I have like, these are my swatches. This is what I'm doing. And so I think you'll see that in CPG, in clothing. You're seeing that, you know, in beverages already with celebrities. And so I think this is just going to be, this is the future.
Yeah. What's the tipping point when it becomes saturated? Because again, coming back to us talking about this being a really aspirational career choice for a younger generation, actually not just a younger generation, quite frankly, but for many generations, But there are only so many accounts one person can follow. And do you think we're going to get to the stage where it's almost impossible to break through because there are so many big voices already in place?
I think that's a really interesting question. But I think if you look back 10, 15, 20 years when people, they were watching three TV channels, you know, I think there's the ability to be mainstream. And I think that we're going to see like the influencers who become the largest and the creators who become the largest are the ones who are have the ability to really just get really huge audiences. And so I think there was a model for like 100 years where everyone watched the same TV show at 8 p.m. So I believe there's definitely room, and there's room for a whole lot of people. And I think there's also, it's like, is everyone going to become Mr. Beast? No, that's going to be, you know, still like the 0.01% of creators. Most people are going to be that long tail, and they're going to have 10,000, 15,000 followers. But that's, you can have a really great career there if you're really smart about it.
Yeah. I'd read I think it was a piece you'd written, but about the micro influencers and, you know, how you tapped into that as well. That is really interesting. And maybe that is the part that feels more accessible to a wider range of people, which again, I'm just using the cliche when saying Kim Kardashian, but you don't need to have millions and millions of followers for this actually to be a viable way of charting your future success or just making money if that's ultimately why you're doing it.
Exactly. I mean, there are so many examples of influencers, yeah, who would say, I guess I'm using more of like the arts and crafts just because it's kind of random and people don't think about it. But, you know, all of a sudden, if you're quilting and you're creating patterns and then you're selling those patterns, there are people who have 15, 20,000 followers who are making six figures, you know, who are making really, really great livings off this. There's a creator that I talked to who has several million followers now on YouTube, and she started out and she was just making slime. And like DIY slime, you know, and like you're like, hey, I'm waiting tables, and now all of a sudden, you know, I'm buying a house for my parents. So I think that that's in terms of, you know, there's just so much income inequality. But if this can be one of those things that actually can be a shortcut and a ladder for people who are really creative because they have a free app and they're creating things that are really, really interesting, like I think that's pretty awesome in its own way. Yeah.
Yeah. It really is. Ultimately, though, are the winners the social media platforms, given the kind of cuts that they will take from this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's always a price for entry, right? Yeah, like nothing is actually free. And so I think another big thing that I stress with creators is you do need to, like, what do you own that's your own on your own platform? And do you have, this sounds old school, but do you have a website? Do you have an email list? So many creators I talk to are like, you know, I have a huge following on Instagram. The thing that converts the best and makes the most revenue for me is my email list. You know, even now, you know, in 2024. So I think that's really important. Do you own those connections? Because time and time again, someone will change an algorithm, someone will tweak something, you know, not like they did anything maliciously, you know, maybe a data scientist at Instagram's HQ updated the algorithm, and all of a sudden that's changed your livelihood. Like that's risky. So I think you need to think about diversifying how you show up and where you show up, which also is a difficult thing when you're really creative and you're trying to do things creatively. So there are elements of being a creator that are real friction points as well. How do you be creative and also diversify? You know, that can be very difficult.
Coming back to it as an industry for the future, lots of things that you've spoken about as being effective are people who have a skill or a craft or a profession or a passion. Those things take time to evolve. They take some kind of training or learning. So maybe this isn't a question. Maybe this is just me mulling over all this information, that people still need to be educated. They still need to find things that they love. They still need to learn things to become passionate and good enough at them for it to be something that they can then create and pass on to others. Maybe that makes me feel kind of really joyful about this.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think that, you know, when you see and you talk about oversaturation, or you see, you know, new, say, high schoolers who want to become content creators, and it's like, who do you want to be like? Oh, I want to be like Alex Earl. You know, it's like Alex Earl is one in a million. She is literally doing get ready with me videos. And then there's just like a twinkle or sparkle about her that really, really people gravitate towards. And I think that if trying to replicate that is not a good recipe for success. So I think there is a real risk in just becoming a general lifestyle influencer right now. And I think that's kind of what most people are like, oh, I'll just go and do that. But I think the really viable way to do this as a career or build a business is to find those real niches where you really can add value. I was, you know, on archaeology TikTok yesterday, you know, like, so like there's just like places that are,
I would love, like, to see, yeah, your search,
right?
History.
I know. It's like, I'm just like in those little nooks and crannies of the internet. And, but I think that that's where, yeah, you've got, just going back to that librarian, you've got 10,000 people who are hanging on your recommendations and wondering what you're going to do next and what you're going to put your name behind and what you're going to do. And I think that that's really where there's so much promise. And the awesome part about that is that you don't need to have a million followers to do that. But you do have something to say, and you do have to have something to add to the conversation. So yeah, I would say, you know, really follow your passions outside of social media, but then find really cool ways to translate that onto social. And I would say that's kind of a real winning recipe there.
So if that's the real winning recipe, what's the biggest challenge for content creators in the future?
I think the biggest challenge is creating content. Maybe sounds dumb, but
because it's laborious, right? Isn't it? It's not.
Yeah,
you know,
it takes a ton of time.
A desk.
It takes a ton of brain power. You just need to have real creative ideas, and you need to kind of constantly be thinking, "Oh, how am I gonna take that, and how am I gonna make that really interesting for my audience, and how am I gonna shoot that?" And so I think that there are some tools, and there will be even way more tools that will really help creators with that. But that's one of the biggest things I see, is that just the creative mental burnout that can happen of trying to wake up every day and be like, okay, what video or two videos am I going to create? And then doing that day after day after day. Plus, you know, I think also the part of communicating with people on the internet can just be quite draining too. So you have to be really smart about how you kind of protect yourself from that. And so I think people are surprised when I talk about how to be a great content creator, because there are a lot of things that aren't actually about being an influencer on the platform. It's like, how do you make sure that you do have time for yourself and you're staying really mentally well and not getting super burnt out, but also, you know, posting really consistently? That's a tough balance.
Yeah. I mean, there's no HR department, right, for content exactly. creators.
And the trolls can be really mean in the comments, you know? So it's like, how are you dealing with that? Are you actually reading all of them? Do you have someone else read them for you? I'm a big advocate for that. Can you have someone else read these comments for you and kind of filter them? Or maybe that will be, you know, AI in the future. I think that'd be a great application.
Yeah. On people with mental health. I totally imagine. May, thank you so much. This has been really amazing. Final question for you. Are you more anxious or hopeful about the future of the creative economy?
I'm really hopeful. I'm constantly saving content that I see everywhere. And so I'm really hopeful about the future. And I think there are going to be just some fantastic things happening.
Thank you. Thank you so much to May Kowalski, CEO of influencer marketing firm Obviously, for joining us on Lives of Tomorrow. Next week, WGSN's Create Tomorrow podcast is back with another episode. This time, the Insight team will be discussing retail trends that we're currently tracking at WGSN. I'm Carla Bazzacchi, CEO of WGSN, and I'll see you next time.